Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Marston and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
Bentley, you've been somewhat pensive all day, a little withdrawn, not quite with us. If you're unhappy, better tell old Jim. He doesn't get much fun out of life.
Jimmy, last night I had a rare emotional experience.
Wacko!
Please, Jim, you know I detest anything coarse. This was a moment of strange beauty.
What did you do?
I listened to a record of myself singing. When I heard that glorious liquid tenor swelling to high heaven, I realized, Jimmy, I was at the crossroads.
Well, of course, it's a much better pitch than the high street. You get all the shots.
Jimmy, I have to make a decision. Should I give up comedy altogether and become another Crusoe?
Not Crusoe, Caruso. Bentley, Crusoe was cast on a desert island and left there to... On second thoughts, you were right.
Well, how many great singers have there been this century? Geely, Melba, Patti...
You're not putting yourself in their class, Bentley. If you're going to chuck up all this to become a full-time singer, it's a big step, you know.
Oh, I feel it is my duty to the world to bring pleasure to the humble and the lowly.
Well, I don't know about the humble. All that Jim's interested in is the lowly. Yes, actually, I pronounce it lolly, but it's the same thing.
Well, I've been thinking about it for a long time. People have advised me to switch over to full-time singing. For weeks now, a chap's been writing to me saying, don't try to be funny, Bentley. Give up comedy, Bentley.
Well, and saying you should be a singer?
Well, no, he's just been saying, get off, take it from here. Never been quite able to make out his signature. Look at it. Looks like Jeremy Odwind.
Oh, yes, it might be, yes. Miss Cogan, we're ready for you to sing, my dear.
Very difficult handwriting, you see. It might be Jamie Adwuds or else... Hey, wait a minute.
Now, Bentley, now, I can explain this, Bentley. Don't be ridiculous.
You can't...
The Navy out on the blue, here's to the rolling sea. And shiver me timbers, here's a toast to the pretty little girl they think of most. Known from Maine to the Barbary Coast as the pride of the Nancy Lee. She loved romance and bell-bottom pants and the boys in navy blue. Her eyes were bright as a binnacle light and the sailors loved her too. Each one would wait and hope for a date and it really seemed a shame. Cause yo heave ho and a bottle of rum, she loved them all the same. Here's to the Navy out on the blue, here's to the rolling sea. And shiver me timbers, here's a toast to the pretty little girl they think of most. Known from Maine to the Barbary Coast as the pride of the Nancy Lee. The captain fell and the crew as well, for the saucy little miss. And one by one, every son of a gun would try to steal a kiss. But all went well, and she finally fell and settled down for life. And yo heave ho and a bottle of rum, she's now the admiral's wife. Here's to the Navy out on the blue, here's to the rolling sea. And shiver me timbers, here's a toast to the pretty little girl they think of most. Known from Maine to the Barbary Coast as the pride of the Nancy Lee. She's the pride of the Nancy Lee.
It's simply sickening, sir. Every single citizen with a sense of civic responsibility should second my suggestion from the stringent thought of investigation.
Well, it's the man who put Umbridge into Tunbridge Wells. Tell me, Mr. Disgusted, what made you take up this habit of writing indignant letters to the press?
All my family are indignant letter writers, sir. My auntie is Delphi et Decorum of Shoreham. My father is pro bono publico of Pimlico, and I have 8 brothers and sisters, all of whom spend their time complaining bitterly.
Who's your mother?
Fed up of Finchley. And all our protests to the press propagate from a praiseworthy preference for the preservation of public prerogatives.
Oh, dear, he's got a pea shooter now. Would you like to give us a such as, sir?
Such as, sir, the public telephone system. Now, answer me this, sir. Why, when you're desperate to make a phone call, why, when you do find an empty telephone box, why? Why does the only small change you have consist of 1/2 crown, 1/6, 2 pennies and 2 halfpennies?
Ah, yes, I know the times I've rummaged through my purse.
And then, sir, why? Why is it never the first, nor yet the second, nor even the third, but always the 7th passer-by who can change your 2 halfpennies for a penny?
Oh, I know it's infuriating, Mr. Disgusted, but does it matter?
Matter, sir? When a middle-aged woman with a shopping basket has sneaked into your phone box while your back was turned, is settling down to a long, newsy chat with her married sister in Cockfosters?
We see your point, Mr. Disgusted. And look what a wrong impression the films give of making a phone call.
You know, I don't see what you mean.
Well, perhaps our Mr. Dunhill can elucidate forward dunners.
Well, sir, the telephone plays a great part in film plots. But how false is the picture films give of a telephone call? Take this kind of scene, for instance.
Hello, operator. This is Percival 0627. I want an urgent call to Glasgow.
What number, sir?
Botanic 4192. And hurry.
Hold the line. Glasgow, Botanic 4192.
Hello?
Rosalind, darling. Oh, thank heaven I got you in time. Don't let Dr. Frobisher in the house, whatever you do. Dr. Frobisher is the phantom killer.
Well, that's how it goes in the movies, but in real life...
Hello, operator. This is Percival 0627. I want an urgent call to Glasgow.
I'm afraid that's a trunk call. Please replace the receiver caller and dial TRU.
Oh, blast!
Trunks here. Can I help you?
But you're the same operator.
That's right, sir. Now, sir, what number are you calling?
I want Glasgow, Botanic 4192.
Yes, sir. What number are you speaking from, please?
Percival 0627.
And what number do you want?
Botanic 4192.
Glasgow?
Yes.
What was the exchange?
Botanic.
Oh, thank you. And the number?
4192.
Is that in Glasgow?
Yes.
One moment, please. I believe that every time... I believe that every time... Hello, is that Manchester?
Manchester here.
Glasgow, please. Botanic 4192.
Glasgow, Scotland.
Just a moment, I'll ask the caller. Hello, caller. Is it Glasgow, Scotland you want?
Yes, yes, yes. Botanic 4192.
Yes, it's Scotland, Manchester. Botanic 1492.
Thank you. Answer me, oh my love. Da, da, da. Hello, Scotland. Botanic 9412.
4192.
I'm trying to connect you.
Glasgow here. Have you finished your call?
I haven't started yet.
Hello, Manchester. This is Glasgow. I have a call for Botanic for London, Percival. Just one moment, please. You're through, Manchester.
You're through, London.
You're through, caller. Speak up, please.
Thank heavens. Hello, Rosalind, darling. Thank goodness I got you in time.
But you didn't. This is Dr. Frobisher speaking.
Kite's talking point. Once again, we meet the Glums, our family of ordinary people coping with contemporary problems. This week, their talking point is the etiology of coryza a hypersensitive condition of the nasopharynx? Over to the Glums.
Oh, wrong. I think I'd better...
Bless
Yes, you hear?
Thank you, Ron. I was thinking out.
Bless you, eh?
Thank you, Ron.
Bless you, eh?
Thank you, Ron.
Eth?
Yes, Rod?
Isn't it nice just sitting here enjoying each other's conversation?
Yes, Rod. I was going to say...
Bless you, eh?
Thank you, Rod.
Eth?
Yes, Rod.
It's treacherous weather, this. You want to be careful you don't catch a cold.
But I've got one, Ron. I've got a terrible cold and I feel awful.
Oh, Eth, I wish it was me that had the cold and not you.
Oh, Rod, why?
Then I could have another one of your mentholated paregoric lozenges.
They're not sweets, Rod.
I like them, Eth. If I suck one of them and go... My throat feels all icy. Eth?
Yes, Rod?
Let's have a mentholated kiss, then.
No, Rod, if you come near me, you'll catch it.
No, Eth, it's all right now we're engaged.
Rod, you'll catch my cold. Oh, no, Rod, don't do give over, please. No, no.
I'll be
now.
Careful, Eth. I'll breathe out. Go on, Eth.
No,
go on, Eth. Oh,
hello, 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 hello. Still at it? Look, I won't interrupt. I just popped in to get your white shirt off the horse, Ron. Your mother's making a boiled pudding. Here. Talking about boiled puddings, take a look at Eth's face.
Eth's got a cold, Dad.
Yes, you have, haven't you, Eth? I don't like the look of you, my girl.
Beauty isn't everything, Dad. Eth has a sweet, generous nature.
I caught it at the darts, Mr. Glam. Oh, I should never have left off my vest when I wore that off-the-shoulder dress.
Well, don't you neglect that cold, Eth. The common cold costs the country millions of man-hours a year. Next thing you know, Ron will catch it and the whole labour exchange will be off sick.
I told you, Eth, you should be in bed with a hot lemon.
Don't fuss, Ron. A couple of days and I'll be right as rain.
Yes, and just about as cheerful. Look, Eth, I'll give you something to put you right. Ron, open our medicine drawer. We never throw away medicines in this house, Eth. Now, let's see, what do we got here? Oh, animated tincture of quinine. Per magistrate of potash. The mixture. What the heck was the mixture for? Here, taste a bit, Eth.
All right, Mr.
No, no, don't taste. It was for the sewing machine, I remember. Must be something here. Ron, what you eating?
Potato crisps, Dad. I found a packet full in the drawer. They're a bit soggy, but...
Oh, put them back. They're centipods. I don't understand it, you know. I had a brand new bottle of never-fail miracle instant cold cure here, and I don't know... Mama! Have you seen that bottle of never-fail miracle instant cold cure? Oh, dear.
What's that?
She says she's been taking it since last November.
Tennessee Local is a slow-moving train. But folks in Tennessee, they never seem to complain. They like a slow ride, so they can see the countryside. I said the Tennessee Local is a smoky little, pokey little train. You never have to worry about it jumping the track. They oil it with molasses, that's what's holding it back. They like a slow ride, so they can see the countryside. I said the Tennessee Local is a smoky little, pokey little train. It chugs along, it hugs along an old rusty rail. It stops at every hamlet to deliver the mail. It slows at every crossing when it comes to a bend. The engineer gets off and has a chat with a friend. You count the cows and chickens as you ride on your way. You read the Burma signs and understand what they say. 'Cause it's a slow train, I said a slow train. But you can see the whole terrain. I said the Tennessee local is a pokey little, smoky little train. He said the Tennessee local is a smoky little, pokey little train.
Waiter! More brandies and soda, please.
What, another three?
Yeah.
Oh, they're good. I'll get them.
I say, Edwards, what an extraordinary country America is. Yes. I mean, look at them all. Keep divorcing each other all the time.
Oh, come, Your Grace. You're behind the times.
I know. That's what I was reading about them. Should anybody stay married over there?
Well, of course, Your Grace. Would you like us to tell you about a typical couple?
Yes. If you tell me about them. I'd like to know. Yes, I'm interested. It's a good idea. One's never too old to learn, you know. I'd like you to tell me all about them. It'd be nice to hear about it. Come on, now, you tell... What are you waiting for? Come on.
We're waiting for you to shut up.
Oh.
Now, sit back, you doddering old fool, and listen. I am Glenda's father, and have been since the day she was born. It was after Glenda quit high school that she met Marvin Hackensack, a typical American college boy whose head looked like a fur-bearing doorknob. Month later, she came and sat on the arm of my chair, mussed my hair fondly with her jackknife, and said,
"Gee, Daddy, do you think a person can fall in love and get married in a month?"
"Why, no, honey. You really need two persons." "I suppose it's that boy Marvin who's been with you these last evenings. Been staying on the front porch pretty late. Kept me awake."
"I'm sorry, Dad. Did the noise worry you?"
"Well, no. It was the silence that worried me." "Glenda, baby, are you fond of this guy?"
"Oh, I love him, Dad. All the girls are just crazy about him. He's always heavily dated. Oh, gee, here he comes."
"Hi, Glenda. You wonderful hunk of smooch." "Oh, pucker up, kiddo. I'm coming in on the beam."
"Yes, he's dated all right."
"Hey, babe, who's the creep?" "Man, will you dig that crazy face lace?"
"Marvin, this is my father."
"Glad to know you, sir. Will you be out of the house for long?"
"Daddy, this is Marvin."
"Son, I've heard a lot about you. Now, would you like to tell me your side?"
"Sir, I'd like your consent I should marry Glenda. I love her, sir. Without Glenda, my life would not be worth living."
"Oh, Marv, you mean if I don't marry you, you'll kill yourself?"
"That has been my usual practice." "Well, what say, Fetzo?"
"Well, Glenda's happiness is all that matters to me. Will you look after her, son?"
"I didn't know she had one." "But, I'll do as you say. Yes, I will, sir."
"Okay, Marvin, my boy. Glenda is yours to take and to hold."
"Gee, thanks, Bob."
"Not now, you clot!"
"Oh, that was a near thing." It was a real beautiful wedding. Glenda, she was all in white. Marvin, he was white and all in. Their first year of married life was unsullied by any hint of the dark clouds that were lying ahead.
"Gee, honey, the supper sure was swell."
"Thanks, sweetie. I pride myself. There's two things I can cook real good. A lemon meringue pie and a fried hamburger."
"You sure can, babe. Which one was that we just had?"
"Oh, Marv, that was cold-boiled ham, Marv. Ham boiled in cold water."
"Oh, is that what I've been eating? Mm. Gee, I'm the happiest husband in Chicago ill."
"Oh, Marv, honey. Say, can you reach me over the salt?"
"If I can't, I'll walk round the table to you."
Yes, their life was heaven indeed. But these two starry-eyed kids were living in a fool's paradise, or as the English call it, a council house.
One day, Marvin came home early, and I could tell he'd been drinking. When he kissed me, his breath unloosed my false eyelashes.
Glenda, I've lost my job.
Well, where did you last see it?
Oh, don't give me your pity. I got fired, thrown out. We're broke. We're washed up, kid.
Oh, don't talk like that, Marv. I can get some work. I can work afternoons only for somebody.
You think I let you do that? My wife working afternoons for some stranger?
Sure.
I still got some pride. You work all day and like it.
Yes, things were happening now to the marriage of Marvin and Glenda. Bitterness was setting in with all its subtle undertones. Then one day, there was a knock at my hotel room door.
Is that the house detective?
No, it's me, Glenda.
Just a moment, dear. All right, Miss Laverne, you nip down the fire escape. Say, I'll see you later, gorgeous. Why, come in, Glenda.
Oh, Daddy. Daddy, Daddy, I'm so unhappy. I could throw myself down the fire escape.
Why, no. Would it inconvenience you just to wait a couple of... I'd rather you...
Oh, Daddy. Marvin emptied the washing up water over me, hit me with the pressure cooker, walked out the house, and hasn't been home for 8 weeks. Oh, Daddy, do you think we're drifting apart?
Perhaps, Glenda, perhaps there's another woman. Any women in your neighborhood who kind of play around... besides that terrible Miss Laverne?
Well, there's always the girl in the drugstore, or the redhead in the tobacconist, and there's the blonde in the flower shop, and there was a girl...
Not so fast. Redhead in tobacconist. Blonde in... Oh, gee, now I've broken my pencil.
Oh, Daddy, do you think Marvin's joined the United States Army?
If he has, I'm converting my dollars into rubles. Glenda, baby.
Yes, Dad.
Little daughter. Come close to your old dad.
All right, Daddy.
You want him back very much?
I don't want to force him back. Not now. You see, I'm... Well, Daddy, this morning I bought a cot. And you know what goes with a cot?
A horse?
Not a cart. A cot.
Say.
Daddy, you're going to become a grandfather? Or if it's a girl, a grandmother?
Where was I? I'd walked out of Glenda's life because I was a burden to her. I just drifted. I slept on benches like a common magistrate. And then... then on New Year's Eve, I was stumbling along when suddenly I saw a cigarette in the gutter. When I bent to pick it up...
Was your mind not taking that out of my mouth?
Glenda's father. Pop, what are you lying there for?
I'm waiting for the water cart to freshen my carnation. Marvin, lad. Glenda's at my apartment. Marvin, she's presented you with a 7.5-pound baby girl. 7.5 pounds.
I'll repay every penny of it. Gee, Dad, I'm a father. A little baby. Mine. Gee, how soon do you think it can start work? Oh, Pop, take me to Glenda right away.
Gee, thanks for everything, Doc.
Well, I must go on to my next patient. Oh, here's two men coming in. One of them's your father.
How is my hair?
She's sleeping peacefully. Come on in, please.
Glenda.
Marvin.
Glenda.
Marvin.
Glenda.
Marvin.
Well, it's three all at the moment. Have we time for a quickie?
Glenda.
Oh, you've come back. Oh, Marv, honey. Look at the cot.
Gee, a little blue elephant.
No, inside the cot.
Oh, let me see. Oh, what do you know? She looks like me.
Yeah, the doctor said it's nothing to worry about. Marv, have you come back? For keeps.
For keeps, baby. We'll stay here at your dad's.
You, me, your dad, and the baby. Just the four of us.
Five, honey?
Huh?
Look at the other cot.
Gee. Oh, yeah. Well, it'll be just the five of us.
Six, honey?
Huh?
Look at the third cot.
Gee. Yeah. Well, it'll be just the six of us.
Seven, honey.
No. Huh?
Look down the fire escape. Oh, Miss Laverne!
Harriet Rabinowitz and the Augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Alma Cogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Mostyn, and the keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in next week and
take it.